everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program on the other side of the glass. And here we go. Monday, September 11th, 2023, the 22nd anniversary of the terrorist attacks on America. One of those iconic days you will never forget where you were. And here we go. We are in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's source for trusted news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, and our live line, 790-2040. At any time during the program, you are welcome to call the live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Monday, we kick off the week with our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. What a wonderful business this is at Moe's. Family-owned and run since 1985. They specialize in custom frame mirrors. We have a couple in our home. Moe is a fantastic photographer. His work is for sale there at the gallery. They, of course, do picture framing. And if you don't want to, after Moe puts it all together for you, and if you don't want to put it up on the wall, let Moe come out. He'll make house calls and make sure it goes up exactly where you want it. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, right next to Copenhagen at Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Last spring, researchers from the United States and Mexico gathered here in Tucson to launch the largest and most wide-ranging effort yet to study the iconic cactus of the Sonoran Desert. That, of course, would be the giant saguaro. Joining me in studio, Dr. Peter Breslin, a staff researcher at the University of Arizona-run Desert Laboratory on Tumamoc Hill, just west of downtown Tucson. That desert laboratory has a very rich, rich history that goes back to 1903. Peter, how are you, sir?
Doing great, Bill. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And all sorts of questions come to mind when we start talking about the saguaro, and of course with climate change. But generally, is the saguaro, or do we suspect the giant saguaro is in some trouble right now?
That is an amazing question. You know, we have the thing that's really amazing about the Desert Lab on Tumamoc Hill is that the saguaro surveys go back to 1908 originally, and then picked up in 1964 again, when the saguaro plots, as they currently are laid out, were set up by Ray Turner and Rod Hastings up there. So we have repeat survey data for about 4,000 saguaros stretching back to 1964 at this point.
Wow.
And you know, we're still in the thick of analyzing that data. It's a lot of data.
So are you saying there are 4,000 plants?
On the saguaro plots themselves, yeah. We went out and surveyed 4,085 individuals.
Okay.
And we started not this past July, but mm-hmm. the one before that, and we finished around the end of February. So it took us several months. Mm-hmm. I had the help of a couple of wonderful, dedicated University of Arizona field techs who were undergraduate students, Luis and Ava. And the three of us were out there, collecting all the data. We were collecting the height of the main stem of all the saguaros on the saguaro plots. We were using a 12-meter extendable fiberglass pole to do that, which was quite a process for
every one of them?
For every one of them. If they were shorter, we would use a tape measure. The diameter and all sorts of the small-scale conditions around the plants, the rock cover, the veg cover, and all this other data. So we have a lot of data, and then the last survey that was done by Susanna Baritica was back in 2011, 2012. And then before that, there were others. Ours is the sixth survey of all these saguaros in this population since 1964. So we're looking at that very dense data set from a very small study site. Mm-hmm. You know, Tumac Hill is just one little tiny part of the saguaros range.
Yeah, but it could be a real indicator.
It could. And one thing that we have seen that we're concerned about to some degree is that the new saguaros, the baby saguaros that come into the population, mm-hmm. are not very many. In ecology or biology, it's called recruitment. It sounds like, you know, getting people to join, you know, your club or whatever.
Sure.
But recruitment is low on Tumac Hill.
I don't like to hear that. That's not a good sign.
Right? And, you know, talking with Don Swan over at the Saguaro National Park, apparently recruitment is low across a lot of Saguaro National Park as well, both units, the west and the east. So that's something we're definitely looking at very carefully. Our project right now is to better understand where saguaros establish and what the reasons are for the areas where they do well. We're hoping that that data and our results will help saguaro restoration efforts, saguaro management, to increase saguaro numbers in populations where perhaps recruitment is low. So it's interesting. You know, it's a fascinating project. Maybe I'm being a little bit of a politician in mm-hmm. answering your question. Mm-hmm. Your question was, mm-hmm. are the saguaros in trouble?
Yes.
I would say that in certain parts of their range, mm-hmm. the populations are showing signs of stress from drought, from heat, especially warm nighttime temperatures,
yep.
and from changes in the precipitation cycles of the Sonoran Desert that have been observed. So the signs of stress are there. Now, to what degree saguaros are resilient, right, to this stress and adaptive to this harsh desert environment, I think that's why we have long-term data, is to get a better handle on that. So
you got to wonder if the range of the saguaros is going to change at all with climate change, because it is very specific where this particular plant grows, Peter Breslin.
Right, right. And as we were discussing mm-hmm. before we went mm-hmm. on the air, when you're driving, you see they just appear.
Yes.
Or as you're driving east, for example, past, you know, out of Tucson on the 10, they just disappear. And mm-hmm. so it's interesting, mm-hmm. those hard edges that their range seems to have. One of my committee members for my PhD, Fabio Albuquerque, who has just the greatest name. But anyway, Dr.
His
Albuquerque.
His last name is Albuquerque?
That is his last name, yes. And he published in 2018 a very detailed study of possible changes in the range of the saguaro as a result of projected changes in temperature and precipitation. And he did find that overall the saguaro could lose about 8% of its suitable habitat. Now, that doesn't sound like very much, but who knows what the real margins are that could end up having a big impact, on, especially on local populations. He also predicted some changes in the range of the saguaro that are quite possibly quite strange. For example, migration of the saguaro across southern New Mexico, mm-hmm. Which would be remarkable if that does occur over the
next
century.
So the migration would go east?
Apparently, yes. there's some other, you know, shifts in range. You know, and we always try to keep in mind that our little human window is actually a very small window a lot of the time. You know,
right.
we're looking through a little tiny window. And, you know, like, saguaros in the northern part of their range have recently been shown to probably have only been up here, so to speak, mm-hmm. For about 10,500 years. So it's really a very short period of time that saguaros have colonized up north. This is considered the northern part of their range here. As hot as it was this mm-hmm. summer, you know, it's...
Oh, I know.
This is the northern part of the saguaros range to a large degree. And so we try to keep in mind the long-term perspective. We try to keep in mind the actual data. And when we, after we're done and we get some results, I think there's a lot of caution in the inference that we draw, because we're dealing with a long-lived organism. you know, we're looking at saguaros that are 60 centimeters or shorter. They're about 30 years old, probably. They don't start to flower a lot of the time in habitat until they're 50 to 70 years old. So these are not even mature plants yet.
Yeah.
And the lifespan is 150 to 200 years. So easily two these days, I guess, about two human lifespans.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're only now starting to put together a picture of the saguaro life cycle and ecology.
All right. We're going to take a break right here. Peter Breslin is with us talking about saguaros, and that's what he does. He is a researcher about the saguaro at the Desert Laboratory on Tumamoc Hill, which has a very rich history going back to the early 1900s. I want to talk a little bit about my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Peter, do you like bakery goods?
I am one of the biggest fans in the world of any combination of flour, fat, and sugar.
Well, that you would be right at home at Mona's Danish Bakery. They're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise.
Oh, I've been at home there.
Oh, well, it sounds like you're very familiar with Mona's and their fine product.
Spectacular. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a great product. They do close on Monday. They have to take that well-deserved day off after a busy weekend. Check it out. They are open for breakfast starting at 6:30, and they do a beautiful lunch as well. Mona's, home of the Danish Kringle. Be right back with Peter Breslin. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
You're listening to Bill Buckmaster. The Ramsey Show is coming up at 1 on AM 1030 KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Monday one-on-one, talking about the iconic symbol of the Sonoran Desert, the giant saguaro, with researcher Peter Breslin, who works out of the Tumamoc Hill, the University of Arizona-run desert laboratory there, which goes back to, like, I don't know, early 1900s, 1905, Peter?
I think it was actually 1903.
Oh, 1903. Okay.
Yeah, and it was,
long time.
Yeah, it was owned at the time by the Carnegie Foundation, and
yep.
Then U of A picked it up later.
So we were talking about surveys, and there was a survey done in the 60s, and then the recent work you did with a couple of University of Arizona students, right?
Right. Yeah.
That was a huge project.
It was.
You had 4,000 specimens to measure and catalog. And so going back to that first survey in the mid-60s, has the population increased?
It has. I think the good news, you know, across the saguaro plots over the past 60 years or so, is that the population has almost doubled. It's an interesting thing to contemplate, that we have a doubling, roughly, of the population,
mm-hmm.
in spite of somewhat harsh conditions over the past 30 years or so, with the prolonged drought and
yes.
changes in precipitation. So I think partly that speaks to how resilient the saguaro really is, and how well adapted it is to Sonoran Desert conditions, within the guidelines of what you might call the long-term Sonoran Desert. The saguaro is very resilient within those parameters. So that's good news. And then you kind of counter that with the shorter-term picture of there not being very many new saguaros over the past decade. And looking at the dynamics of the population, probably, and this is the thing about saguaros, the bigger they are, right, and the more arms they have, the more sort of mysterious and charismatic they are, that is also the older they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a very similar life cycle to other, large organisms or us,
mm-hmm.
Which is that the older they are, the more likely they are to die.
Well, and they become like we as humans. The older we get, we become very susceptible to disease and basically our bodies just wearing down.
Right. And when you study population dynamics, you look at the probabilities, sort of like in an actuarial kind of way, the way insurance companies do, right?
Yeah.
And so on Tumamoc, for example, we're looking at an aging population mm-hmm. of saguaros. And we're looking at not many new ones relative to the long-term history of the population. So the next 50 to 70 years or so, the likelihood is for a shift in those numbers, where we've seen from 64 to now, we've seen almost a doubling of the population. But I believe the signs are there, especially with climate change, that over the next 50 years, that trend will probably be significantly reduced. Now, we haven't actually analyzed that data yet, but that is a hypothesis that we're definitely going to be testing.
The Tucson Audubon, a nonprofit dedicated to protecting birds and their habitat, has a very ambitious program. They're looking at planting 14,000
right.
Saguaros. It is very difficult to, from what I understand, Peter, to plant a saguaro and get it to actually take and live.
Well, I understand that as well. And, I think, like Jonathan Horst, who's leading that project,
mm-hmm.
he recently wrote an article for the Cactus and Succulent Journal that I'm the editor of.
Okay.
And it's, great description of the whole process. And it's funny, too, one of the things that they're running into is a lack of supply of saguaros, even from nurseries, from commercial production.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get enough saguaros to plant out right now. So that one of the big parts of their initiative is to cultivate as many saguaros as they can. We hope that the current project that we're working on, which is looking at where saguaros establish and why, will help in these restoration efforts, especially from burn areas where all the vegetation often, you know, is greatly reduced or even eliminated. And so how do you best increase the odds, right, of each one of the saguaros that you're out there planting? We're hoping that our research and our results will at least help folks to understand what the preferred microsite kind of characteristics are that saguaros do best under. There is, you know, there's no 100% certainty, but if you're planting, I think, without any awareness of the local environment, the odds are actually not very good.
I wouldn't think so.
But if you have some data behind you and some understanding of the way the saguaro responds to its little, you know, site that you put it in. And one thing to keep in mind is a lot of these saguaros are very small. I mean, we're talking 5 centimeters, 6 centimeters across.
Little babies.
Yeah. And so they're very vulnerable. You know, they, and this is a normal part of the saguaro strategy, if you will, you know, adaptive approach to the landscape, which is that, I mean, these things, when they germinate, I don't know if you've ever seen a saguaro seed. It's like 2 millimeters across. And the little tiny saguaro seedling is roughly the same size when it first comes out. It's about 2 or 3 millimeters across. And it has to make that journey over a 50 to 70 year period before it even starts reproducing from a little 2 millimeter thing to, you know, to an established saguaro. And obviously, I believe, you know, the local conditions at a very small scale around these little tiny plants must be very important. And that has been studied, but we're hoping to add, you know, to the understanding of what makes saguaros successful where they are successful.
So. All right, Peter, before we let you go, in my saguaro stack of stuff in anticipation of the interview, is it Michelle Pillet, P-I-L-L-E-T, a doctoral student in ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Arizona, led a new study. This was in the New York Times. The piece was published in the Journal of Nature Plants. I'm not quite sure how that the name is pronounced there, but this individual found that over half of the cactus species may decline as the planet warms. That was the bottom line with the study.
Yeah, and that was echoing an earlier study in 2015 that showed that 30% of the cactus family, the whole family, is at risk of extinction, or is threatened or endangered anyway. Yeah, Mish is a good friend of mine.
Okay.
He actually runs a nursery here in Tucson called Prickly Prospects. And his specialty is raising extremely rare, very endangered plants and raising them in cultivation ethically and making them available to people who love cacti. So he's doing great work with conservation in addition to his PhD studies. But yeah, I found that study in Nature Plants to be alarming and very convincing. I think it's very well done. What we do about it going forward, I think everybody's talking about that right now. Do we get more cultivation going? Do we work on better stewardship in habitat? How can we actually, you know, be resourceful and respond to these threats in the most intelligent way? And of course, as a scientist, I always think that that means using science, which, you know, at least you have some data and you have some patterns that you can follow. So I, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this all unfolds over the next several decades.
So getting back to my original question, is there a concern about the future of the saguaro? And I think the answer to that, Peter, is yes.
There is a concern. You know, I think there's concern about loss of suitable habitat. There's a concern about an aging population that's not being replaced. There's concerns about the effect of fire, especially the hot fires that are caused by buffel grass. Our initial findings are finding that new saguaros don't really survive in areas that are colonized by buffel grass. So there's a lot of different pressures and possible threats for this iconic species right now.
All right. Any final thoughts? I've got about 1 minute to go here, Peter.
1 minute. I'm not sure I can keep any of my comments within 1 minute, but I will say thank you for having me, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about saguaros. I obviously could go on and on.
Of course.
And, you know,
this is your thing, and we would expect you to go on and on. And one thing we didn't cover, a lot of people saw the headlines, 400 saguaros were blown over during one of our particularly weird, very destructive storms.
I look forward to getting out there and talking with Don Swan about that and taking a look at the that event, because that's a huge impact out there. So
that was at Saguaro
West.
Yeah. The Saguaro National Park West.
Yeah.
All right, Peter Breslin, we will have you back. A terrific interview. Thank you very much for our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. They're located at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com. We'll take a break right here. Buckmaster on a Monday.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this September 11th. Hope we never forget what happened 22 years ago. I know I'll never forget it. Additional support for our program comes from Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. 13-acre site, home also to Zocalo and all that wonderful merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They're in their Green Things 53rd year of business, and they are open daily. Let's welcome back to the show our contributor on all things to do with the border, Keith Rosenblum, with our monthly border report. Hey, Keith.
And good afternoon, Bill.
How are you, sir?
9/11 also was the day of the day that Salvador Allende was overthrown in Chile.
Wow!
And killed. And so today, I spent the first 3 or 4 hours of the day sporadically listening to the ceremony at which his daughter Isabel Allende spoke. She's a senator now in the Chilean legislature, and so. And the reason that I wound up listening to it, I didn't know that it was, is because President Lopez Obrador of Mexico is there. He's in Chile. And so they had this beautiful ceremony broadcast live. And, of course, there were recognitions to a bunch of the foreign leaders that were there, and among them was President Lopez Obrador.
The president of Mexico says that operations at Mexico City's principal airport are very risky. I wonder if he's trying to promote folks to use and airlines to use the new Mexico City airport. And this comes after Mexico is now this week recovering the American air safety rating. So a lot happening in air transportation south of the border.
As a man that just flew last week from Ciudad Juarez opposite El Paso to Mexico City for $35 and flew into Mexico City airport, the main one, Benito Juarez, and had a very easy time of it. And as now as a man who's going back to Mexico City in 2 weeks and was just online and saw that you can fly Ciudad Juarez to the new airport, to AIFA, A-I-F-A. It's known by its acronym. It's actually called the Santa Lucia Airport. And the rates at Volaris for the nonstop from Ciudad Juarez, which is about 1,200 miles, is $12. I don't think I've seen an airfare listed at $11.98 for a long time.
$12.
Yeah, and I think I will actually take that flight. It's $12. Unfortunately, I have to pay the airport usage tax, but still $12 to travel that distance. That would suggest to me that no matter what they do, they're not having a lot of success getting flights into the new airport. And, safety is not the factor. That's all I can say. It's not the factor. What the president is trying to do, number one, he, by decree, which is always a bad idea, shifted all the cargo operations from Benito Juarez over to AIFA. And then he declared, like we did with the wall, these presidents find ways around their inability to marshal legislative support, so they make decrees. And so he decreed, basically, that Mexico City Airport is unsafe, and so they need to reduce the number of hourly slots from 53 or 59 to 43. They already delayed that, but he did announce it. And so whatever he can do to kind of bandage the losses at the new airport, he's trying at every turn. And I will again reiterate, it is one gorgeous airport. I look forward to flying into it. The problem is, it's like it is flying into an airport that is gorgeous in of itself, and has very little in the way of surrounding infrastructure. And it takes you an hour and a half to get to the heart of Mexico City. So it's going to have its day, but the day is not right now. In the meantime, they have one gem of an airport, that I will say. It is beautiful. The problem is it just doesn't have any flights.
You know, I look for, now that the category, the FAA in this country has now downgraded the rating. Well, that actually, no, they've upgraded the rate. The downgrade happened 2 years ago, the safety rating. So this should help expand new routes from the U.S. down to Mexico, maybe even perhaps Tucson.
Well, yeah, but it won't be Tucson, because Tucson, what happens with Tucson is nothing's nonstop, right? So Tucson won't count in that category. Two flights from Tucson will invariably become domestic flights when they go to Guaymas or Hermosillo or Culiacan or Obregón like they used to. So those actually become domestic flights, and they won't fit the category that we're worried about, you know, for security purposes. But Phoenix does. Phoenix has nonstops to Guadalajara. Phoenix has nonstops everywhere. So they, you know, you'll be able to go to Guadalajara, Cabo, Mexico City, I think Vallarta. There's any number of destinations, both Volaris and American Airlines, and that those slots could increase, I suppose. But it is kind of a it's a blessing on one hand. With López Obrador trusts nobody. He doesn't trust American. He doesn't trust DOT, and he doesn't trust FAA either. So what he's been saying all along is, look, Benito Juarez Airport was in the hands of the cartels anyway, and you guys kept rating it among the safest, which actually shows that even in the hands of the cartels, that the airports were in pretty good shape in Mexico. The cartel, and I think it's a good springboard to talk about how throughout Mexico you have very serious safety concerns all over. But that said, and again, we've covered this topic before, when you have the cartels very frequently do their jobs. They maintain public order in some situations better than police do. Just that don't interfere with their business. Don't interfere with their business model of people smuggling, drug smuggling, arms smuggling, charging what they call piso, which is a take of a business. Like you go in and you arrange, okay, we're going to take 5% or 10% of your business. And this is no different than what the Purple Gang or the thugs, you know, governments, gangs did in the U.S. It's just Mexico in 2023. So the president is right in certain ways, but he is certainly not a believer. He doesn't believe in the World Bank. He doesn't believe in a lot of these international institutions at all.
Keith, you've been crossing various borders in Arizona, California, New Mexico, Texas. How does Sasebe rate?
Thank you for the opportunity. For your audience, I told you I wanted to talk about it. Sasebe, Arizona should be an alternative to Nogales. And Sasebe, Arizona, Sasebe, Sonora. The gate is open, which I learned the other day. It's open from 8 a.m. until 6, Monday through Friday. It's like store hours, like a CVS or a Walgreens or something, or Green Thumb. So the hours on the weekends are, you know, properly 8 to 8, so a little bit longer. Anyway, here was the situation. I think it's worth passing along to a listenership because it shows just how we check ourselves, and it shows how we do let ourselves become both victims of fear and also fear mongers, I guess. And when I last crossed at Sasebe on a longer trip, I think 20 years ago, maybe 15, 20 years ago, and it sits right there. It's an hour from Tucson. You go over to what's it called, 3 points or 5 points, whatever it is, or 3 points, you know, on the way to Ryan Field. And mm-hmm. then you drop down through Aravaca and over to Sasebe. And it's a gorgeous crossing. Sorry about that. And the crossing itself is, a long time ago, it was a maritime crossing. They used the platform or something of the design of a maritime port and plopped it down in the middle of the desert, which was Sasebe. I say cookie cutter. And so what you have there at the port of entry is, number one, an old GSA maritime port, which can't be touched because it's on the National Registry of Historic Places. And then we go ahead and we built a much more sophisticated modern customs right next to it, Nesselin, is being used today. But the thing is, there's no traffic there. So we're talking about IFETs. It's funny to have these conversations back to back. There's no traffic at Sasebo, largely because people are afraid because of the drug war and the immigration war and all the other things that are going on that are unsavory. And anyway, I was on my way back from Puerto Libertad the other day to back to Nogales. And I was crossing through La Y, then Caborca, then Pitiquito, and I got to Alpar. And Alpar is the from which a road, won't call it a highway, but a road that starts at Alpar and does come up to Sasebo. So I did a quick Keith Rosenblum analysis and realized that if only I wasn't, you know, kind of reluctant, that I could actually avoid going to Santa Ana and then avoid coming back up to Nogales. And on a Sunday afternoon, I could also avoid the hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, maybe 3 hour wait at Nogales, right? So the quick calculation was, and I had a gathering I wanted to come to in Tucson. So my quick calculation was I could save 2.5, maybe 3 hours if I would just use Sasebo. And so I go into the pharmacy in Alpar and talk to the women behind the counter. And I said, hey, women behind the counter, I really don't feel like adding 3 hours to my trip. I just don't. I just need to know locally if Keith Rosenblum takes the road from Alpar, then up to Sadik, and then from Sadik to Sasebo, which is about an hour and a half or so said and done. It's a lot of it's half of it's paved, paved to Sadik. There's unpaved between Sadik and Sasebo. Will Keith Rosenblum be kidnapped, chopped up into little pieces, and fed to the livestock on the side of the road? And the women, as it goes, your humor is a universal. Women said, no, I said, what are you talking about? We live in Sasebo. We commute every day. It's a long commute, so it's like an hour to, this is at the pharmacy called La Plaza. So anyway, so I decided, okay, you know what? I am not going to let fear today be keep me from getting to Tucson, or I'm just not going to make it to Tucson. Well, who knows? I don't know what's going to happen. So I made the drive. I made the drive from Alpar to Sadik, and then from Sadik to Sasebo, which is much slower because it's not paved. So you're sometimes you're going 10 or 15 miles an hour. And I have an older Kia model that's black, and I kept the windows open the whole time. And I was there were cars behind me that had polarized windows that would follow from now and again, but you don't even know. They may just have been trying to get to Sasebo themselves. So it turned out to be an entirely uneventful trip. I got to the port of entry at Sasebo. In Sasebo, Sonora, you actually have to look around for where the port is because it's so infrequently used. It would be like being in Tucson and saying, you know, how do I get to, like, Tanca Verde? You know, there's not signage anywhere. It's not, you don't think of it as being a port city at all. And Sasebo itself was really, I think it's like five, maybe 8 or 10,000 people. It was a hopping place on a Sunday afternoon. There were people playing baseball and people, you know, there were some rodeo types of activities going on. People come, you know, they look at you in your car, but, and you don't know if they're looking at you because they're in the game, you know, they're in the smuggling game or the trafficking game. And you don't know, you look back at them. So kind of say, well, here I am. I'm Keith Rosenblum. I'm driving to cross over. So I got to the port of entry, totally unfettered, unimpeded on anything. And I pulled up to Sasebo, Arizona. Where you been? Well, I've been in Puerto Libertad. And got a look of, you know, like, is that right? Really? This is from CBP. And I said, yeah, that is right. And so they said, well, do you have anything to declare? And I said, no. And into the United States I came. So the point of the whole story was that, and it's merely anecdotal. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't be chopped up the second. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't be. But it shows you how really even, you know, how even for someone like myself who travels all the time, how maybe number one, maybe learning too much or knowing too much can be scary or can be an impediment. Maybe it's your ignorance or your innocence or your naivete that, that paves the way for you. Was I skittish about it? Sure. But at the same time, you say to yourself, you know, you can't go through life worrying about things like this. And so yeah. I came through Sasebo and my experience was stellar without any event whatsoever. And I pass it along because a lot of the borders are that way now because they really are the trafficking. And as I say, people trafficking and drug trafficking are in the hands of different cartels. And in particular, the area around Sasebo is a disputed area. You go from Sasebo down to Caborca, at least according to what my DEA tells me and what Mexican agencies tell me, the truth, I'm not sure we really know.
All right, but Keith, we'll take a break right here. When you come back, only have a couple of minutes, but I do want to talk a little bit about the 2024 Mexican presidential elections. That'll be after we take a break. Right.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Each day, it's Bill Buckmaster at noon, followed by The Ramsey Show next. Join me and my co-hosts for 3 hours of the tools you need to win with money.
Welcome back. It is The Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Make a great getaway this time of year, especially things starting to cool off, very pleasant. Great time of year to do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. 3-hour drive approximately east of Tucson will get you into Grant County, New Mexico. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Check it out before you jump in the car, truck, or maybe on the motorcycle. Keith Rosenblum is with us for his monthly Border Report. The candidates have been selected for the 2024 presidential elections in Mexico. Who's running, Keith?
Bill, I'll tell you that momentarily, but I also want to take a very quick personal second to tell you that sometimes you miss people, not so much because you knew them, but because of the absence they create or vacuum they create. And I want to tell you how much community will miss Ann, because we know you. And we know that anyone that could be by your side for lots of years of doing something that is increasingly rare, which is to try to tell stories within community and actually research things and be as methodical and objective and as decent a man as yourself requires somebody right next to him for lots of years and somebody who's patient and tolerant and understanding. And so on behalf of a lot of us who didn't have the honor, or if it was, it was a very brief one that I don't remember, I want to tell you how much your partner is missed by all of us.
Thank you so much. 51 years, delightful time together, kind of a storybook time, and then 10 weeks from diagnosis to death, but it's very sad.
Well, she is reflected in your work ethic and your balance and all the fabulous things you've done for community. And I very rarely step out of role as reporter, but this will seem like the right moment. Anyway,
thank
on
you.
To 2024
thank
Mexico.
You.
In the last week, the surprise that was not really a surprise occurred, and President López Obrador says Claudia Sheinbaum, the governor of the state of Mexico City, Ciudad de Mexico, is going to be the party's choice to succeed me. And that was done supposedly, and I'd say that with a certain qualification, on the basis of polls within Morena. And this is very important because López Obrador himself is very much a individual creature. The party, Morena, which is a long acronym, is a recent one. It's not so much a party. If you ask people to define the platform of the party, most people, Mexicans included, cannot define it. They can't tell you, oh, pro-right, they can't tell you what the policies are. But anyway, last week, Claudia Sheinbaum, who's a fascinating study and very atypical for Mexico, she is a 50-ish Jewish physics PhD from University of California, Berkeley, totally non-charismatic. The woman is a nerd, and a nerd, and to me anyway, incapable of creating any kind of excitement for anything. But she is the one that the party chose, and I say that now with the, taking into account the asterisk. López, she's been a presumed favorite of President López Obrador for years now, and she won the poll over Marcelo Ebrard, who was a brilliant and was former also governor of of Mexico City, foreign minister until a couple of weeks ago, knows the world far better than probably anybody else in Mexico, and he finished in second place.
Wow.
There's been all sorts of allegations in Mexico that the poll itself wasn't a fair one. I don't know. But anyway, she is a... she certainly has, in Spanish, they say, no tiene cola para pisarse. She doesn't have a tail to be stepped on, in other words, a corruption. And the next thing that's so interesting is that her primary opposition, at least right now, is Xochitl Galvez, who is a woman as well. And so guess what? Mexico's going to have a woman, barring something really freaky, Mexico will have a woman president starting in 2024.
Very interesting.
And there's a lot of minority candidates, too, but... Oh. The time has come, and if it has a woman, then yikes. All I can say is the world's a changing place. Anyway, well, we'll see. In 2024, the election's, I think, on June 2nd. I got to double-check that. And then the new president will take office. I believe it's either September 1st or September 16th. And López Obrador says, which is very difficult for most Mexicans to believe, that he then vanishes. He goes to his ranch and vanishes. Does some writing, but he no longer plays any role in public life. But this has been the kind of the duplicity of the man for a long time. To say, I remove myself, it's almost like it's a sign-off, like a tactical thing. And then there he is again, droning on about this or that topic. It's important that your listenership know, today, I think, or tomorrow, he'll be press conference number 1,201.
Oh, my God.
And you've, Rosenblum,
you've been ready, there.
You bury me, please.
Yeah, you've been there for all of them.
No, I haven't.
Okay.
But I've listened to the man. I know the word.
All right.
The next word out of his mouth.
Got to run, Keith. Okay. Always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
You bet.
All right, Keith Rosenblum with us with the Border Report. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of John, my fine engineer producer on the other side of the glass. Hope everybody has a good day.